Hey there, I'm Jamie from Stonemaier Games, and I'm here today on Wednesday, March 27th, the last live cast in March, to hang out with you for an hour. I hope you're doing well. As usual, I have a couple different topics to talk about today, but I'm also happy to answer any questions that you have. And I also want to say up front, so this is Wednesday. Usually I do these live casts on Wednesday, and I probably will do one next Wednesday, but next Monday is April 1st, and we usually do something fun but also real at Stonemaier Games on April 1st, and that is the plan for this April 1st. And so most likely, this is the plan, I think 99%, I will send our monthly April newsletter on Monday, and then I will go live, as I normally do, after the newsletter for a Facebook live cast. Maybe I'll do like a half hour on Monday, and at 10 a.m. Central Time is normal, and then I'll come back on Wednesday and do a full hour, something like that. We'll see how it goes. But I'm letting you know that there should be a newsletter on Monday related to April Fools, and I will be live for at least a little bit after that newsletter to hang out with you and talk about what we're doing for April Fools. So let me segue real quick into my chocolate of the day before I forget. We made brownies yesterday from the box, but I spiced it up a little bit by using coffee instead of water, which is a nice little thing to enhance it, give it a little more depth of flavor. And I added more chocolate chips because more chocolate chips always makes it better. So that is my chocolate of the day, these delicious brownies that were fresh out of the oven yesterday, still good today. Let me know what your indulgence or treat of the day is today. Joshua gives me a nice reminder to share the comments today. Here, I'll even share that comment to get in the habit of doing it. Thank you, Joshua. I accidentally said Hobbit there, but that actually is a nice small segue that we did a magic draft last Wednesday. Some friends and I had some extra packs of the Lord of the Rings set that came out earlier this year, or last year, I guess, almost a year ago at this point. And so we did a draft of that, a five-player draft, and had a lot of fun doing it. And I actually went undefeated, almost lost two of the games, but came very close and ended up winning all four games that I played, because we did we do round robin. You play one game against each other player in the magic draft. I had a good time doing it. Let's see. Nate says, I got to make a fun announcement at game night last night by only putting expansion boxes in his game bag and announcing a very special expansion coming for his wife and him later in October. Congratulations, Nate, on you and your wife having a baby, being pregnant. That's amazing. Congratulations. That's really wonderful to hear. And that's a fun way to hint to your game group at what's happening. Corey, who is one of the many people who helped out on Saturday, pops in here to say this. So one of the titles of today's live cast is hacking. And a very brief synopsis of this is that you can watch the full video on the YouTube channel from Monday, and I have an article about it on Stonemaier Games. But my personal email was hacked on Monday, which sounds like it probably shouldn't impact Stonemaier Games all that much, but it did in ways that surprised me. I try not to use my personal email for work, so that was almost the least of my concern when it happened. But our YouTube channel is tied to my personal email account and can't really be untied as far as I know. I think I've updated some emails on there, but I think it's still tied to it. And the hacker, that was what they focused on. They focused on the YouTube account. So you may have seen some odd videos on YouTube over the past weekend. Those weren't me on Saturday. Those were a hacker trying to run a cryptocurrency scam. And they also, they didn't take these over really, but by having access and taking over my Google account, it wasn't just Gmail, my Google account, they also took over a bunch of Google Sheets that I use for a lot of Stonemaier Games stuff. So it was enlightening to me how much is tied to my personal email, even though I don't intend it to. And it was an incredibly harrowing day. Like, it was maybe the longest 9 hours of my life to go through that and try to, and that was best case scenario, that it was actually, that I was able to recover these accounts within 9 hours, thanks to a lot of people posting to YouTube and Google like Corey, which is why I have Corey's comment on the screen here. But fortunately it was recovered. I'm still kind of going through the aftershock of it, both emotionally and psychologically and logistically, trying to take many more steps to secure these types of accounts so this can't happen again. But I did, and I should let you know, I did have two-factor authentication set up. They were able to bypass that because this is an account that I'm just always logged into. If you have access to my Chrome, my computer, you have access, you have access to those accounts. Anyway, that's a long story short. I'm happy to answer questions about it, of course, but if you want to hear the full story, check out the blog post and the video from Monday. Tim says he was in a friendly local game store and noticed the realistic resources and some coins were in that new eco packaging, except you can't see the contents. Makes sense if you're ordering online, but not so much in a brick and mortar store. I agree. And in general, we have found that the biodegradable bags that we used for about a year just aren't good enough. Like they don't serve the purpose of a bag well enough. They somehow disintegrate well before they should. And so I agree with you, Tim, that is a problem the bag needs to be transparent so you can see the components, but it's also just the bags were a problem. So we actually haven't sold those bags in a while. So they may have had those on the shelves for a little while. But we're phasing them out and hopefully we'll find another solution in the future that is either biodegradable or recyclable. Plastic bags usually are not recyclable. I also want to mention before I forget, Man versus Meeple is doing a Meeple Madness bracket of 16 different games that I think are fairly recently released. And so as soon as this video ends, if you go over to the Man versus Meeple YouTube channel, you can check that out. And you know, I think you'll be able to vote on games if you want. Totally your choice. But I think it's, you know, a fun thing to do these bracketed tournaments during March Madness. And we did one recently, I think I announced it last week, where Mark, who is very involved in Rolling Realms, he helped us put on a bracket of 32 different promo realms for Rolling Realms. And the winner was just voted for yesterday. Maybe it was this morning. But the winner of this tournament, all 32 realms, and really I tried not to include Stonemaier Games realms in it, but we needed six to fill them out. And so we did have six promo realms for Stonemaier Games realms. And one of them won, the Apiary Realm won. So congratulations to the Apiary Realm for getting the most votes. And congratulations to Brian C. for being the person to you know, how you fill up brackets to guess which realms, which teams will do the best. Brian C. had the best bracket. So Brian, if I can get in touch with Brian, he will win a little gift card to Stonemaier Games. So that was a fun little thing to participate in. Hopefully it was fun for the people who participated, at least. It was neat to see. And thank you, Mark, for setting that up. Also mentioning Man versus Meeple. David from Man versus Meeple is driving through St. Louis today. And so I'm going to have a little disc golf outing with David this afternoon at 1 o'clock. So if any of you have any questions for David that you want me to ask him, this is David from Man versus Meeple. We're going to play disc golf for about an hour. I'm happy to ask them to him then. I also got to see some of my coworkers and Connor and Brandon from Inside Up Games yesterday. They're in town in St. Louis as well. We had dinner last night. It was great to see them. Oh, Jake from Me Like Bees says he proposed to his wife with the game Medium. He says, I had her play a card first and then the card in my hand said, will you marry me? It was very cool. Oh, that's clever. I love board game or tabletop game engagement stories. So that's wonderful. Ian says that he is finishing his fifth game of Tapestry for the week. I think he's on spring break right now. Second with Plans Employees, and he's teaching Jeff from his Wednesday game nights on Friday on Board Game Arena. Oh, thank you for teaching, Ian. I appreciate that. I see a few well wishes, including one from Valerie here. I saw one from Matt earlier about the whole hacking experience on Saturday. I appreciate the well wishes. Julio says, does it feel like it's happening like you mentioned in the blog? Yeah, the way I described it in the blog is that it doesn't feel like something that happened. It feels like something that's still happening. And that feeling is very much still the case. It was a huge invasion and violation of privacy and my things, my digital things, and myself, an extension of myself is in these things. I don't think that will go away, Julio. I think that will remain. I don't think that's going anywhere. I think the logical side of my brain says that everything is safe now. I've taken all the measures to tighten the security, the recovery options, to clear things from my computer, to run multiple virus scans using different software. I don't know. Yeah, I don't feel as safe as I did before. And maybe that's a good thing, that I should be nervous, that I should be on guard for cybersecurity even more than I was before. But it's also discomforting. It feels like someone who I don't know has been in my home. Yeah. Jeff says, I feel for you with a hacking problem. I was a fill-in teaching at a semester in a college in Rwanda, went to print out some handouts at the local print shop and got a virus that messed up a ton of work and curriculum on his PC. Took about a week to recover everything. It's a jarring emotional experience. It's good to hear that you are recovering. I'm sorry you went through that, Jeff, and Monica, Jeff or Monica. That was, I can relate to that. And I'm sorry you had to go through that too. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, this is a good, even better than recycling, is reusing bags. If you have extra bags, don't throw them away. Use them in other games, and that's a great way to go. Chad says, can you ask what's up with all the Diet Coke? Sure, yeah. I'm happy to ask. This is David from Man vs. Meeple that I'm going to hang out with a little bit today, and I'm happy to ask him what's up with all the Diet Coke. Jordan says, the Andrew Bosley cover art March Madness tournament on his Discord has been great. Tapestry is about to go up against Everdell Newleaf. Ooh, that's a tough competition. Andrew makes beautiful covers. And Andrew recently sent me something that he's been working on. This is a sneak preview. I don't know if he's revealed it on his Discord yet, but I do want to share it. He gave me permission to share this. But he is working on a series of travel guide style books in a fictional universe that he's working on. And he sent me a prototype of it. I don't know if the final copy will look like this. He just printed a few prototypes of this book. And it is a beautiful 32-page book. I'm trying to open it a little bit here. 32-page book showing different magical locations in this kind of fantasy, just fictional world that Andrew is working on. I think he's planning to have a Kickstarter for this sometime during the summer. And I'm lucky to get an early copy of this. He is sending this to me because within this world, we are working on a series of games. I haven't talked about that much. I'm not really going to talk about that today, but I do want to explain that my connection to this book isn't just my professional relationship with Andrew and through his work on Tapestry, but also because we're continuing that professional relationship with a series of games in this world that Andrew has built and is continuing to build. So I'm really, really excited about that. Oh, Garrett's next comment was, he mentioned that I might have some news to share. That's the news right there. Yeah. Ian says that he's struggling to beat Automa level 3 in Wormspan after 21 games. You'll get there. I believe in you, Ian. Keep trying. Tim says, now that you've played Dune Imperium Uprising, that was a video that I released, yesterday, I think? What do you recommend for someone who doesn't have any version of Dune Imperium yet? That's a good question, Tim. Because Dune Imperium will stay on my shelf and will continue to get to the table. I think Dune Imperium is a wonderful game, and I will continue to enjoy to play it. If someone came to game night and said, like, say a year from now, this is hard to predict, but say a year from now, someone came to my game night after I've played Dune Imperium Uprising a number of times, I've already played Dune Imperium a number of times, and someone brought Dune Imperium Uprising to my game night, and I had both to choose from, I would probably choose Dune Imperium Uprising. I think it has enough little improvements along the way to make it to give it the edge versus the original. The only caveat there is if I was trying to teach a new player, and the Dune Imperium Uprising does add a few elements of complexity that I think might be a little confusing for a new player. So I might still go with the original Dune Imperium, and because, you know, I play games with people who are learning those games quite often. So I don't know, Tim. If you plan to go deep into one of the games and play with the same exact people, go with Dune Imperium Uprising. If you think this is a game that you'll be introducing to new people from time to time, I would go with Dune Imperium. That's my call. Scott says that he just finished his solo campaign of Charterstone. Congratulations, Scott. Thanks for playing through Charterstone. He says, what fun it was. Can't wait to play another campaign. I have a recharge pack and we'll take a break before jumping in. I think that's a good idea to take a little break. I found that even as a designer, by taking a break after playing my first campaign of the published game, that I forgot some of the things that happened, so I could enjoy the experience like a player who wasn't the designer could do that. So I think it's great idea to take a little break. But congratulations on finishing the 12 game campaign. Levi says, sorry to hear about the hacking incident. I was actually playing game 21 of your Ruling Realms playlist when I noticed the rest of the videos were not visible anymore. And here, I was a little lucky here, Levi. I've heard that this type of hack, this type of scam that people are running, it is faster and easier for them to change all the videos on a channel to private rather than delete them. And it probably gives them the chance to make the channel still look legitimate if the creator can't recover the account. And so fortunately, I didn't actually lose any content. It was bulk changed to private. And so when I recovered the account, I had to bulk change everything back to public. And that's why some of you who may have gone to the YouTube channel on Saturday night or Sunday may have seen some videos that seemed a little out of place. Like there were some cat videos and some older videos that were private, nothing like confidential or secret, just videos that aren't meant to be public. You may have seen some of those videos. And I decided to leave the cat videos public because they're pretty cute to me. I like them. But Levi, I agree. I'm glad that the old videos weren't deleted, and hopefully you can continue playing game 21 when you're ready. Ray also got to try out Dune Imperium Uprising, and he says, I was super impressed by how it took mechanisms that I was thoroughly familiar with and made a completely new game out of it. He says, he agrees with me about the spies and the two influence requirement spaces being great innovations. When you play Dune, either version, do you usually favor a combat strategy, a faction strategy, or do you like to mix it up? I like to mix it up. I feel like it would be a little difficult to win. I'll peek over your comment here. A little difficult to win Dune Imperium without engaging in combat at all. And so I tend to pick and choose my combats. It's not like, I would say it's hardly ever an all-out combat strategy because you can't always get points from it. So I try to focus and wait for those right moments to get points when I can through combat. I would say if there's anything that I fairly consistently do in Dune Imperium, it is that I love being a little sneaky with the intrigue cards. I really like the Bene Gesserit intrigue cards. So I generally go after those cards and see what I can do. Yeah. Ray says he would also recommend Dune Imperium first. It's a great introduction to how the game works and a delightful game in its own right. And actually, I'll add to Ray's comment here, Dune Imperium, the original, is available digitally. So you could just, Tim, you could play Dune Imperium, the digital version, to see how you feel about it. In fact, that might be a great way to do it. Play the digital version, play it out a number of times, and then get Dune Imperium Uprising. Unless still, if you think that you'll be teaching the tabletop version to more people, and then I think it is a little bit more accessible. Rocky has a different opinion. I respect different opinions here. He says Uprising might work better as a one and done sort of game without thinking about the expansions for the original Dune. And that's a great point, that a lot of the expansions for the original Dune kind of have influenced the creation and what they put into the Dune Imperium Uprising box. And so I don't know if they'll have expansions for that. I think it's less likely that they will. So you can get everything just one and done, as Rocky says, with Dune Imperium Uprising. Brenda says, hard decision for her as well. She says, I think by then I'm hoping to have come up with a mix of stuff, incorporating some of the expansion stuff with a custom Imperium card row list. That would be neat to see. Yeah, I don't know the rules for like combining earlier expansion stuff with the new version. I've heard that most of it isn't compatible, but I don't really know. So Brenda, I would be curious to see what your list is in the end. And at the very least, they made all the card backs the same so that customers could make a custom version of the game. Caleb says, I like your presentation of Smitten on the wall behind you. Good eye there, Caleb. Yeah, a few of my coworkers put this together for me. So this is Smitten, a little one to two player cooperative game that I designed to celebrate the Stonemaier Games 10th anniversary a few years ago. And a few coworkers to celebrate that put this very nice frame together with the cards on the inside. Yeah, it says 10 years of Stonemaier Games. Yeah, I really like it. And Jake from Eli P says, silver lining, the hacker released the cute cat videos. Yeah, that is a nice silver lining that they didn't necessarily release them, but they made me realize that they were there. And so it was, there's Walter being really cute and my late precious bitty boy. Got to see some videos of him being clever back at my old condo, just opening doors, opening cabinets, doing stuff that Bitty did. He was if you watch those videos, he was a very expressive cat. You can see in his eyes, there's a lot of thought and I think intelligence behind those eyes. I miss him a lot. Valerie points out that a hacker, if they mass delete videos, that throws up a red flag to YouTube. And so they, by making them private, they get to fly under the radar a little bit longer. Look, Damon J is also planning to pull out Charterstone after it's been on the shelf for a few years, starting a new game. I still feel like Charterstone is the best legacy game out there for families. I'm honored to hear that. Yeah, especially among some many other amazing legacy games. It's still one of the few legacy games that is not built upon another game, another existing game, which I think is a very clever thing to do, what they do with Pandemic and Ticket to Ride and Risk. I think that's very clever way to approach these legacy games. But it all is also neat to see legacy games like Charterstone and like The King's Dilemma, where they're not built on an existing game. Yeah, that was a fun experiment to do. Corey from Blue Falcon says, if anyone is close to Huntington, West Virginia area, he'll be running the board game library and doing demos all day Friday, Saturday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. for HerdCon at Marshall University. Corey is a great teacher of games too, if you have the chance to take advantage of that opportunity. I want to mention this because Corey might be teaching this game at this event. Friday is our retail release date, Wormspan. It may feel like Wormspan has already been released, but it hasn't. We just, we have a little bit of buffer time between our launch and the retail release date, so we can make sure that we can get everything to all the retailers who want the game on the retail release date. So this Friday, March 29th, 2024, if you're watching this in the future, is the retail release date for Wormspan. And if you missed out on getting some of the accessories that we had for Wormspan, like the rubber playmats, the metal coins that come with the wooden tokens, the upgrade pack is what we call it, we allocated many of them to retailers. That's one of the reasons that we sold out and we stuck with those allocations. Retailers got a significant portion, really, of those accessories. So if you missed out on getting them from us, you might check with your local retailer to see if you can get those accessories from your local retailer. We are, of course, already reprinting more, so we will have more in the future. But I understand that you already paid for, if you bought from us, you bought Wormspan from us, then you already paid for shipping and may not want to do that again, and so, which I completely understand. So check with your local retailer to see if you can get those upgrade packs. Hopefully they also aren't too frustrated, because I think retailers probably also didn't get as many of those packs or those rubber play mats as they want. But we are making more for them too, not just for our web store. Jonathan's working on a Kickstarter, launching the Kickstarter in July for a game he's been playtesting for 4 years. Wow, that's awesome, Jonathan. With 12 nations with unique powers, any words of wisdom from Tapestry about balance and beyond tons of playtesting? I mean, the main thing that I learned from Tapestry, especially the original game, Jonathan, is that a lot of playtesting is great, but it's also almost equally important to have to analyze that playtest data through the eyes, I think, of a data analyst. I analyze the data, of course, as a developer of games, but it was only after we had a professional data analyst look at the data in ways that I couldn't see that we started to much better see which factions were, which civilizations were too strong or too weak in the hands of experienced players. So if you haven't already done that, Jonathan, I would recommend finding a data analyst who specializes in that sort of thing, share the playtesting data with them and see if they can find anything, even if they're just identifying like this faction wins more often at this player count than other factions or nations you're calling them. That could be helpful. I'm guessing maybe you know someone who does this, but if you don't, let me know. There have been a few data analysts who've reached out to me over the years offering to help, and I'm happy to connect them with you. Beverly says the hack was on Friday. No, it was on Saturday, Beverly. Sorry if I misspoke there. The hack was on Saturday morning. It was on Saturday morning when I tried to install what I thought was a digital game on my computer, an advanced copy of a digital game, and it was not at all. And it was, I know that sounds like something that you should never do, right? Never install software on your computer that you don't know where it comes from. But I did not find any of the red flags that I usually look for in this type of download or this type of situation. Yeah. Uh, Oh, yeah. Chad mentioned a couple of weeks ago, John Oliver on Last Week Tonight had an episode about the pig butchering scams, which is not about pigs or butchering at all, but it sounds like there are a lot of victims on both sides of the scam. So just a quick, so this isn't what happened to me, but it is something to keep an eye on for. If you ever get a text from someone who you don't, from someone you don't know, who doesn't call you by your correct name, and they mention kind of a random, seemingly random topic, don't ever reply to it. It's not real, and they're trying to scam you. They're trying to form a relationship with you and then scam you. That is the long story short of the pig butchering scam to watch out for. I have certainly gotten texts like that too, and I have not responded. But I can see how someone would fall for them, just like I fell for the hack on Saturday. Julio says, I know you mentioned the April Fool's letter to be sent next week. Monday is April Fool's Day. That's when I'll be sending a newsletter with what we're doing for April Fool's. He says, how excited are you for Monday? Do you do any nice pranks to friends and family too? There have been past years where I would do little things for coworkers in particular when I worked in an office. Since I've moved towards, you know, full-time position at Stonemaier Games and running this company for a long time now, I've learned that the type of prank I like to run isn't really a prank at all. It is a silly thing that is a little bit outside of the normal, a silly but real thing, basically. That's outside of what we normally do at Stonemaier Games. So I guess I should mention a little word of caution here. On Monday, you will probably see some game announcements or weird announcements from a variety of people for things that seem a little weird. In fact, you might even see it for Wormspan, given all the Wormspan memes that you've probably seen over the last few months. Those things aren't real. So I think it's important if you do anything like that on Monday, if you post a fake game photo, mention somewhere in the comments or in the description that it is a joke, because some people won't realize it's a joke, or they'll scroll through Instagram 2 months from now and find that image and they'll think, wait, Stonemaier Games didn't tell me about that, or X company didn't tell me about that. So I think it's really, really important to do that. And pulling that back to Stonemaier Games, we don't do any jokes or pranks that aren't real or aren't abundantly clear, very clearly in the description, that it is a joke. And I'm thinking of what we're doing on, we don't do anything that isn't actually real. So we have we're kind of an outlandish thing that we're doing on Monday that is 100% real. And I also have a somewhat silly video coming out on Sunday that is, I guess it's a real video. It isn't announcing any fake thing. But I guess long story short, Julio, I am excited. I am curious to see what other people and other companies do. But I don't engage in any pranks anymore that really fool anyone. I try to avoid those. Jake from Me Like Bees says, what would you say in your mind makes a great board game teacher? Any teaching tips? I'll try to come up with a few off the top of my head. When I teach a game, I try to explain very briefly like what we're going to be doing in the game and how you can win or lose the game. If it's a cooperative game, if there's a lose condition. I typically, after doing the overview and pointing out a few key icons, like, oh, this is what the victory point icon looks like. These are the resources. This is the heuristics of the game. This is what maybe an action space in the game looks like in a worker placement game. So after explaining very briefly the heuristics of the game, if the people who are playing are up for it, I typically then like to walk the first player through their turn, through the first turn of the game. So I'm showing all players what a turn of the game looks like in showing a player how to take a turn and actually having them take a turn. Because I think people generally learn by doing rather than listening through a long rules explanation first. I know some people don't like that, but it is helpful when people are up for that, for learning on the fly as they go, as I'm layering on rules while we play. So that is how I generally teach games. And it usually works out pretty well, unless there is someone who wants all the rules up front. However, in that case, I would say if you do have someone in your game group who wants all the rules up front, and you know that you're going to be teaching a game to them, and you want to use my method of teaching, which is teaching as you play, let that player know in advance that you're going to teach that game and give them the opportunity to read the rule book or watch a video about the game in advance. That way that person can be prepared for their style of learning, and you can then engage the rest of the group in that step-by-step teaching while you play method. I found that can work pretty well. Josh has a nice comment. I appreciate that right from the beginning. You've always gone out of your way to share your knowledge with us from Kickstarter to game design to being hacked. Yeah, I you know, it's part of, thank you, Josh, for saying that. And that's the type of, I have learned so much from so many mistakes, and I'd much rather share those mistakes publicly so that other people can hopefully not make those same mistakes. I think anyone could have made the mistake that I made on Saturday when I got hacked, and I hope other people don't. So, yeah. Garrett says, the first print run of Wormspan was 100,000 units. If you can share, how many are in the second print run? I don't know if we've locked it up yet, Garrett. So, yeah, I don't know if we've, I don't think we've finalized that that quantity yet. So I don't know offhand. I don't know. But I will actually check to see, because I think we need to lock that up. I may have signed the quote recently. Let's see if I can find our second printing of Wormspan. Here we go. I'll leave Garrett's question on here. Garrett's asking about the print quantity of the second printing of Wormspan. Wormspan second printing. Here we go. Did I sign off on this? I did sign off on this. Okay. It's 20,000 copies, 20,000 English copies, and then a bunch of other localized copies in other languages. Yeah, another around 30,000 copies. Yeah. So a total of around 50,000 in various languages. Austin says, is the collaboration with Andrew Bosley the new game reference? So I'm not going to say that, Austin. I will say that we are working on a game series with Andrew Bosley, and Andrew is starting to show off that world. He has been showing it off for a while, but he's going to start showing it off in a tangible form through this book. This is a travel guide to Brandemir, one of the places in the fictional world that he's building. David says, speaking about Charterstone, are there other legacy games that have the same user-driven rule development rather than a planned linear format? I feel that it's unique to Charterstone and probably a real challenge to design. It is definitely a real challenge to design. So Dave is referring to a little bit that the rulebook for Charterstone, when you open the rulebook, it has a few rules in it, but it's fairly empty. And as you play the game, you unlock rules that are added to that rulebook permanently. A number of them are added even in the first game, but more are added as you play. I would actually say that most legacy games have stickers that you're applying to the rule books to change the rules permanently. But I don't know if there are many legacy games that have as few rules up front as Charterstone does. That was definitely a goal of mine, especially given that it was a new game that people didn't have context for, unlike Risk Legacy, Pandemic Legacy, games like that. So it's probably not unique, but I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head that went that light with the rules. And originally, I wanted no rules. I wanted a completely empty rule book, but playtesters kept asking for something to have up front, even something just to read up front. So. Sean is heading to South Africa. His wife Yvette is from there on holiday on Friday and have a couple stopovers en route. I always see the word en route, and I think I mispronounce it. Is it en route? On route? So we're taking a few board games with us for the airport and went chilling, including Apiary and Red Rising. Yvette has used our original Wingspan box to pack a few other games in. That's clever. Yeah, it's amazing how when you try to pack up games for travel, how you can condense it down to a much smaller space. You can definitely do that for Red Rising. And Apiary probably still takes up quite a bit of space. I'm curious to see how you pack that in. Beverly says, have I played Sweet Mess? I haven't played Sweet Mess, Beverly. She says it would make a good Rolling Realms addition. Yeah, I'll have to try out Sweet Mess. For now, I would say, Beverly, our strategy for Rolling Realms, because we have so many promo realms that we've already released and still more to come and even more new realms in Rolling Realms Redux. Our strategy after Rolling Realms Redux, other than, yeah, for the most part, I think there's like one other promo release after that, is to probably stop making new promos for Rolling Realms, especially since we want all promos to fit into the Rolling Realms Redux box, or all realms to fit into that box. And if we keep releasing promos for other games, non-Stonemaier games, then that the promise of that box will not work out in the long run. So we are going to plan on continuing to release realms, promo realms based on new Stonemaier games, but we probably won't continue to do that for non-Stonemaier games. But that's where Fan Realms can make things fun. Every 10th live play, I play fan realms that are inspired by other games. So that's a good opportunity to make realms. And Beverly, in fact, if you want to give it a shot, make a realm just for fun, for sweet mess. And I might play it in game 70 in a few months. Josh is talking about the hacking that happened on Saturday. I think it's harder to catch scams as a business. You want to respond to everything, and sometimes that makes you more apt to respond when you shouldn't. And that's what really got, that's one of the things that got me with this scam. Like I replied and got a real human response, or it appeared to be a human response. I don't know if it was AI or not. And that's what really hooked me. Once I was like, oh, okay, it's a real person. They're writing back on a reasonable time frame. We're talking about the topic. This doesn't feel scammy. And even though I had a little bit of a red flag, I still went with it. Yeah. And I shouldn't have. Should have listened to my gut. I'm scrolling down looking for questions here because I'm a few minutes behind. Let's see. Corey says, there's a TikTok creator who is from Canada, and he is running 1 kilometer for every board game he plays this year. That's good to pair health with health and fitness with board games. He's doing it to try to offset the sedentary nature of the hobby. Have you ever done anything similar? I'm currently reducing his purchases to 2 games for every 10 pounds I lose since I'm trying to get back into shape after a knee surgery. Corey, I think it's great that you're getting back in shape after knee surgery. And that's a neat idea to pair game, the game, every game you play with some sort of exercise. Have I ever done anything similar? I haven't tied a fitness goal to my gaming hobby. I haven't done that, but I do have a regular workout routine that works for me, or has worked pretty well for me. But that's neat. I think we're all motivated by different things. And I think if you find that thing that really works for you, that's wonderful. Damon J says, when teaching Scythe, I like to start with letting people watch the learn to play video as I set up the game. That's a clever way to go as you're setting up, which can take a few minutes, that you let people watch a video and learn a little bit as you play. Also, I wanted to mention for Scythe and for some other games, some games come with quick start guides. We have them in Apiary. We have them in Scythe. We have them in Wormspan or some version of that, like a teaching guide, a quick start guide. I think those elements in games, if you have them accessible, they can make teaching games even easier. Or hopefully that's the intent of them, at least with our games. Chad says, I lived in apartments and houses with a yard and know there are pros and cons. Do you ever miss having a yard? Actually, I do have a yard tied to my condo apartment complex here. And I use it surprisingly little. I should use the yard more for, I don't know what I would use it for. It's a beautiful garden, like yard, like a little park, essentially. But so I guess I would say, no, I don't miss it. I like having it. I like walking through it. But I've never had a yard except for growing up in my parents' house. And I don't particularly enjoy yard work. I don't enjoy maintaining a yard. I think a lot of people get a lot of joy from gardening and that type of outdoor activity. I don't. Or at least at this point in my life, I don't. So no, I don't miss it. Gary says, the Ticket to Ride Legacy has a fairly open route to filling out the rules as you go versus a strictly linear structure that some have. Okay, so that has the Charterstone method of filling in the rules in different places as you unlock things as you go. I still need to play that. I still need to play Ticket to Ride Legacy. Donna says that Divinus has full pages for stickers to be added to the rulebook too. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I knew there'd be other examples. Rarely is something truly unique. En route. Okay, this is the en route that I usually say. En route. So it's not even route. Okay, en route. I will try to remember that, Caleb. Thank you. En route. Yeah, Merlin's Manor says the same thing. Chet says, I'm curious if any of the other publishers have seen any impact on their games that you use in Rolling Realms. Not sure if there's any way to quantify that. Have you heard anything? I haven't heard anything except for the guy who makes Micro Dojo. I think it's been positive for him. He is probably one of the lesser known games that are in Rolling Realms promos. I think it's had a little bit of an impact on him. I hope that it has had at least a small positive impact on these other games, in that someone might play a realm, discover something that feels right to them in that realm, and then go learn a little bit more about the game that inspired it. That'd be amazing if it happens, but I have no way to quantify that, and I haven't heard anything other than from Micro Dojo. Good question, though. Oh, I wanted to mention something that came out last week. Someone asked me last week for my pet peeves in gaming, and I answered about analysis paralysis, and I mentioned about, and then about like game nights, playing games. And I also mentioned about phones, people who play on their phones at game night. And I got an email from someone who I thought was really insightful. I'm glad they mentioned this, that for this person, they, to survive, they have to check their phone every 10 minutes because it's tied to their diabetes and their insulin. I think they're checking their insulin levels on their phone. And if they don't, it can really put their body and their life and their health at risk. And I wanted to say, I appreciate this person reaching out to me and letting me know that there are reasons beyond just playing on the phone that people are on phones. And I wanted to say, I understand. I hear that, that even though there are, sometimes I think people are playing on their phones at game night, sometimes they're on their phone because they need to be, because it's an emergency, because their partner has to contact them about something, or there's a health reason like this. And so, I wanted to say that I understand that, and I will do a better job, I think, in the future when I see that happening, of maybe telling myself, oh, maybe that person isn't detracting from my experience of the game here. They are just doing something that they need to do on their phone right now. And I also wanted to invite anyone, when that's happening, to be aware of the others at the table. When you have that emergency text on your phone and you need to take it, that to invite you to let the other players at the table know. You don't have to tell them the secret. You don't have to tell them the details of the emergency or the medical situation, but to trust the players that you're playing with, that their experience may be impacted by you being on the phone, and that it might help them to know that you're not playing around on your phone, that you're on your phone for this moment because you need to be. And I think this can go both ways. And I appreciate this person for bringing it to my attention. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there about last week's live cast. What else is going on today? I actually think I've touched upon everything today, so I can just focus on your questions for the rest of the live cast. I might recap some of the topics that I've gone over later. Let's see. Edgar says, I'm on his way home from the game store with Expeditions Ironclad. He got a 40% discount. Very nice, Edgar. Congratulations. It's a nice discount on the Ironclad edition, just in time for the Expeditions expansion in a few months from now. Robert says, Disc Golf, are you my twin? Not that I know of, Robert, but he says, as a Minnesotan now in Pennsylvania, I can't recommend Blue Ribbon Pines anymore. If you're ever in Eastern Pennsylvania, hit me up and I'll take you on a tour of courses. Thank you, Robert, for offering that. Yeah, I'd love to play. When I travel now, playing disc golf has really opened up some fun things to do when I travel. And I'll definitely take you up on that if we go to Pennsylvania in the future. But yeah, I play disc golf. It's been my pandemic sport. I play every weekend. And actually this past weekend, I played at a course that I've never played at before, a place called La Vista here in St. Louis. It's a beautiful course, kind of out of the way, but it was a beautiful course. And I got my first ever eagle. I was on a team partnership, me and Dave, my coworker and friend Dave, we were on a team. And we happened to use all of my throws for this shot, but it was a team eagle. An eagle in disc golf is when you shoot 2 under par for that that basket. And I have a few aces, and so those are technically eagles, but they feel like a different category. They're aces. They don't necessarily feel like eagles. But this was the first time that I got a legitimate eagle. It was on a wide open field with a big tree in the middle of the field, and the basket was way past the tree. Basket was 750 feet past the tee. And I threw a really big uphill drive that kind of ended up tucking a little bit more behind the tree than I'd hoped. And so for my second shot, I threw a big arcing shot over the tree, another probably 350 feet. And we didn't really know where it ended up. I knew it was a pretty good shot. It got past the tree. It was somewhere near the basket. And it was right near the basket. It was an elevated basket on a windy day. And so I still had to hit a putt to get the eagle. And I hit the putt from about 15 to 20 feet away, down off the elevation, shooting up into the basket, which is always nerve-wracking, especially on a windy day. Anyway, it was one of the highlights of my disc golfing plays over the last few years to get that first eagle. So Robert, hopefully you have an eagle too. Do you have an eagle story to share here? Let me know. Oh, my friend Jake was there. Jake was playing a beautiful, amazing round you were partnered with Zach and Paul, and you guys won and had a wonderful round. Jake says, I'm guessing installing a disc golf practice basket in front of your yard would go against the HOA. Jake, I would love to play disc golf in front of the in the little garden that I have here. Probably installing it permanently might be a problem, but putting it up for a picnic and putt day sometime would be a lot of fun if people are up for that. You also have a nice park near you that we need to play at sometime with some practice, some of the portable baskets that we have in our group. Tim says, will you make a trip somewhere to see the eclipse on April 8th? So apparently there's some pretty good viewing areas not too far from St. Louis where you can look at the eclipse, but I'm probably just going to look out the window for a few minutes. Yeah, I don't want to drown on anyone's excitement, but it isn't something that I want to go out of my way for. So no, I'm not doing any special trips for it. Chad has the same idea about putting a disc golf basket in the yard. I could, yeah, I don't own one, but some friends do have some portable disc golf baskets that we can put up there. Ian says, so I mentioned that my hope is that some people play a Rolling Realms promo realm and then go and discover the game as a result. And Ian says that he has had that happen a few times. That's awesome to hear, Ian. Thanks for sharing that. Derek says, if you have any doubts about email and you know the company that the sender is sending is claiming to be is reputable, find that company's contact info from the website and follow up that way. Derek, I think that is a great approach, a great way to go. And really, usually when I get an email from an unknown sender, my red flags go up right away in my mind, and I'm very cautious. But this one didn't, you know. Someone mentioned to me that they view these sorts of hacks or some form of hacking and scam not as something that will happen eventually to everyone. It was one of those things where I was like, I figured it could happen to me someday. I was on guard for it, but I didn't. The logical side of my brain thought that I would always be able to identify these obvious email scams, right? When you get an attachment or a weird link from someone that you don't know. But this one's by my guard. And so I completely agree with you, Derek, that's a better way to go. An odd email from someone that you don't know. Valerie says the en route is French. The way you pronounce it is closer to the French than on. So en route, I think, is what people are saying here. Valerie also says, any book suggestions right now? She says, I just picked up Scythe and it's great so far. You're right, it has nothing to do with the game, but it is a fun dystopian hook. The book Scythe, nothing to do with Scythe at all. I am currently finishing the Bear Town trilogy and still really enjoying it. So I'm in the third book of the Bear Town trilogy of books, which is about a hockey town in Sweden. Valerie, I think we've talked about it before, so you're already aware of that series, but that's the one that I'm reading right now and I'm really enjoying it. Chess says, is that a Smoking Bones blimp on your shirt? Sorry if that's a spoiler question. Yeah, I won't reveal any spoilers that are on my shirt, but I can say that the Zeppelin that's on the shirt, where is the Zeppelin? Where is the Zeppelin on there? It's probably for Chargers. Oh, right here, right there. That's a reference probably to either Pie in the Sky from My Little Scythe or Charterstone. There's Charterstone. Yeah, I don't know what the blimp is referring to. What would that refer to? That's Charterstone. Maybe Euphoria? No, that's Euphoria. My Little Scythe. That's Scythe. Or the Mecha Scythe. That's My Little Scythe. Yeah, I don't know what that one's referring to. It might be. We'll see. We'll find out. Now that spring is here, got me thinking. This is a comment from someone named Repair, maybe. Have you noticed any seasonality differences in sales? Like, do people tend to buy and play more in winter when it's too cold to do anything else? I could probably do a tracking of sales, but for us, for the sales that are really easy to track, which are on our web store, they're heavily impacted by whenever we release a new game, which isn't connected to seasons at all. It's related to when the game is ready. So it would be tough for me to look at that and see. We do see an increase in sales in the winter holiday season. People tend to buy more products then. But beyond that, I haven't noticed any specific seasonal patterns. Yeah, beyond when we release games. Yeah. Cedric says he really gets to join live. I'll take the opportunity to say thanks for the amazing games. Thank you for saying that, Cedric. You put out there and for the passion sharing, very inspiring. Thank you, Cedric, for joining all the way from Belgium. A little bit maybe in the early evening there in Belgium right now. Thank you for popping in to say hi. I really appreciate that. And I always want to invite anyone. If you've never commented on the live stream before, I completely understand if you don't want to. I usually don't comment when I pop in and watch live streams for a few minutes, but you are always welcome to comment. You're always welcome to ask anything, even if you feel like it's something that I've answered a million times before. Feel free to ask it. I don't put every comment on the screen if it's just a comment, but I do try to read every comment as I scroll down, and I try to answer every question as long as it's not a spoiler question. So always, please always feel free to ask questions here, even if you've never done so before. Chad says, do you ever customize your disc golf discs? He says, I have a great Innova Monster disc that I drew a monster on. Chad is a very talented artist. It's his favorite forehand disc. Do I ever customize them? I don't, no. Partially because a lot of the discs that I use are Stonemaier Games discs that we've created. And so I'm part of the customization for creating them in the first place. Yeah. A lot of people chiming in about disc golf today. This is fun. Roland Rate says their dad has funny disc golf goals. He's trying to hit an ace with a disc name for every letter of the alphabet. He's only missing Y at the moment. So he has 25 aces with 25 different discs. That's incredible. That is incredible. I've been playing disc golf every weekend for 4 years now, and I have two aces. So I don't know if that says anything about your dad's achievement there. That's incredible that he has 25 aces so far. Paul was at this amazing course. Paul also had an amazing day of disc golf on Sunday. He says the elevated basket was also up on top of an elevated area surrounded by stones. So you're pretty close, but still a big, big putt. It was a big putt, and I haven't had a lot of confidence in my putt lately. But I really wanted to hit that one. It was nice to know that I had Dave as a backup if I missed the putt. But I was happy to get up there and actually hit it. Edgar says, will the expansion to Expeditions fit in the base game? That is a goal for all of the expansions that we make, Edgar. And that is the case for Expeditions, especially given that we intentionally left room for potential future expansions in the box. So it definitely will fit into the base game. Corey has a good reminder about the eclipse. I said, I'm going to look out the window when the eclipse happens. I'm not going to look directly at the sun, but I'm glad Corey says this. Even with sun blocked, do not stare at the eclipse without the proper sunglasses. So yeah, I don't plan to look at the sun during the eclipse. I'm hoping to look outside and maybe for it to be a little darker than normal. Is that what will happen? But I'm not going to look at the sun. Please don't look at the sun. Tim says, I have to say it would take a while because of traffic, but the difference between partial and totality is night and day, quite literally, I think night and day almost, and it is a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. Maybe it will inspire a new game. You should go. I've heard that it is quite a big difference. That's cool, Tim. I'm excited for anyone who's excited about it. Robert says he's played for 6 years and have a handful of there I am. Video is back on here. Daughter is enjoying using the Stonemaier kitten disc we bought her. She's been using it in the at the end. The tickets are drawn for discs or other gear that has been donated. Well, Valerie, if you ever want a Stonemaier disc or a few of them donated to that event to encourage the kids to keep. Having fun. I'm happy to support that. That's wonderful. That hobby, we have them on our web store. Paul says the last total solar eclipse in St. Louis was one of his favorite experiences in his life. Truly, it was literally breathtaking to experience on a physical level. I'm gonna have to learn more about this, I think, because in my mind, like every night the sun disappears and it gets dark outside. And I know it's probably surreal for that to happen during the day when we're not used to it being dark, but I can't quite conceptualize, and maybe that's why I just need to experience it to find out. I can't quite conceptualize how much it is different from the nighttime thing that happens every day. So I'd love to learn more about that. If anyone has any thoughts about how it feels so distinctly different from what we experience every day when the sun is blocked and we can't by the earth turning. Yeah. Edward says, if you're ever in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Johnson Park is a great hilly disc golf course. I appreciate that recommendation. Yeah, that's great. It's been a long time since I've been to Grand Rapids, but I might go back there someday. Rolling Rates talking about the hacking that happened to me on Saturday. Was it a spoofed file type on an attachment? That is going to be very tricky. No, it's even worse. It was, and I say even worse in that I should have realized what I was doing. It was an email exchange with a game company that was offering me an advanced copy of a digital game. I downloaded the game through a link they sent me within a PDF. I downloaded the game. I opened it. It was a RAR file, RAR. I opened it and unzipped it, essentially. And then I tried to open the application. So I did all the things that you should never do after hearing from a stranger. But because it felt so very real, I did all those things. Yeah. Cedric says, have you ever considered a Scythe RPG? I love the lore. Years ago, we did consider it. We thought about it. And then I realized that I know nothing about RPGs or RPG publishing or what makes a great RPG versus a poor RPG. It is not a space that I'm very familiar with. And so rather than hold on to the rights to a Scythe RPG, I kind of just told Jakob, who owns the Scythe world, the 1920 plus world, I said, if he ever wants to do it, I will support him and I won't hold it against him for doing something on the tabletop, even though we have the tabletop rights, if it's an RPG. So it's entirely up to him. I don't think he's going to do anything with it, but it is a really neat world though. I agree. But no, there won't be a Scythe RPG, at least not from Stonemaier Games. Julie says, we're enjoying Charterstone and how the game naturally and gradually progresses in complexity. Also, someone inevitably opens a crate late in the game, which gives us a cliffhanger for the next time. That's always exciting when that crate happens late in the game. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, Julie. Thanks for sharing that. Miles said he missed my eagle. Yeah, we missed having you there, Miles. Miles, you would have been our third player because we needed one more player on our team. Stefan says, how would you prepare for a board game activities at his son's school? Various gaming levels, beginners to more advanced, multilingual, Chinese and English, and limited for teach and play. How would I prepare for board game activities? I would choose games that are language independent and have very short teaches, at least for the first time that you try these activities, the first few times. I have a video, if you want to check it out, about a sequence of games that you can use to kind of move people into modern gaming. I think if you search my YouTube channel for the word sequence or sequential, you'll find this video. And that's, I think, a good way to start something like that, especially if the people that you're talking to have not played modern tabletop games. They probably have played digital games, though, so you might be able to use that as a way to get them into it as well. Ann says, do you play Rolling Rights? I do play Rolling Rights. I have many, many favorites. I have a video about this, of course, as well, if you want to check out my video on Rolling Rights. Of course, I love the game that I designed, Rolling Realms. It does everything that I want a Rolling Right to do. It scales infinitely. It plays quickly. It has a lot of variety in it. I also love On Tour. On Tour, I would say, is one of my other favorite Rolling Rights. Maybe even my other favorite Rolling Right, if I had to choose one. I really love On Tour. Caleb said, what's an ace? A hole in one? Yeah. So an ace in disc golf is the same as in ball golf. If off the tee, you put the disc into the basket, that is an ace. Yeah. A hole in one is essentially the same thing, but it can be used a little bit differently. Like sometimes in our group, we use hole in one as a term of doing the exact same thing, but not doing it during a game or a competition. Whereas an ace is when you're actually competing against friends, officially, in some way, that is what we call an ace, and you get it in the basket on one shot. Rolling Rate says that their father has 65 or 66 aces at the moment. He tries to match his age. That's incredible. I, yeah, that's really, really impressive. Races, have you ever unintentionally spoiled a game or aspects about a game before you intended to do so? I have. Yeah, several times. Definitely. If so, how major was it? The question was inspired by a friend who recently accidentally spoiled the gender reveal of their baby over text. I've spoiled a few like expansions in games over time. Usually just like the box of it, sometimes the name. I think there was one actually in an early video for Tapestry. I held up the video for the box for Tapestry, intending to only show the front of the box. And then as I went to put the box down, I flipped the box around to the camera and showed the back side of the box and accidentally revealed it that way. I think I've revealed it in the background of Instagram photos in the past. So yeah, I've made plenty of mistakes with that. And it ends up being kind of a fun thing when I do. It hasn't ever ruined anything. But I try to be aware of it. Let's see. I'm a few minutes behind comments. Let me see if there's any more questions before I have to go today. No, I think I'm caught up. A lot of people talking about the eclipse and the experience that they've had, like looking at the eclipse or being a part of it when it's happening, which is neat to see. Tony says, our group played Pendulum last night for the first time in quite a while, and the entire group says, why don't we get to the table more often? Just a note to let you know there's some love for it out there. Glad to hear that. I know the designer put a ton of work into it. We put a ton of work and love into it. It didn't hit the way that we hoped it would, but I'm glad you're still having a good time with it, Tony. Okay, here, Tim is going to help explain the eclipses to me. A big difference between dawn to dusk and an eclipse is the speed of how fast it goes from light to dark. Since the sun is still high in the sky, it is still casting sharp shadows, but they get distorted, and then it is dark as night for 5 minutes and then sunny again. It's enough to change temperature, air movements, and affect animals, like birds stop chirping. And during totality, you can only see the corona of the sun with your naked eye. It does sound really amazing. I'll need to, maybe that's a good reminder for me to at least go outside during the eclipse and not just watch it from inside my window. Wendy just recently finished The Midnight Library after I recommended it. Thanks for trying it out, Wendy. I'm glad many people recommended that to me as well. I really enjoyed that one. And Beartown. Beartown has really hit me home. Trying to think of other books that are kind of like The Midnight Library. I think there was a book called like Reboot that I read. It's a little bit of an older book, but it's a little bit along the lines of The Midnight Library that I really enjoyed a while ago. James has just played a solo variant for Rogers of the Ganges, The Dice Charmers. Have you ever played? I have, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a video about this. This was one of the early pandemic games that I played because I think it came out right at the pandemic. And so they ended up making a digital version available on yukata.de. So we played it a lot there and I really, really enjoyed it there. Hopefully I did a video about it. Ed Bighead says, have you ever delved into tabletop war games like Warhammer, Star Wars, HeroClix, MechWarrior? I have not. I probably should. Like, it isn't a genre that excites me at all as a gamer. Fighting isn't what I seek in games. Even tactical combat games isn't fun for me in general. But as Ed points out, there are probably some good mechanisms that I can learn from in those games. And so I probably should play them a little bit to learn from them. But I haven't really done that. No. Kieran also says Pendulum is one of his partner's favorite games. That's wonderful to hear. Table the Game says, is there a date that you plan on having your open world game come out? There's not a date. There's not a date yet. No. And Mark is popping in right at the end to ask if we can recap the last hour for him. I can't do that, Mark, but I can thank you for running the Rolling Realms March Madness bracket. And I announced earlier that Brian C. had the best prediction, so Brian C. won, and that the Apiary Realm won the entire bracket, had the most votes in the final of the bracket. So thank you, Mark, for hosting that, putting that on. And I look forward to if I can get Brian's email for sending him a gift card to our web store. All right, I'm a little over time here, but thank you all for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate all the support that many of you contributed during the hack weekend, this past weekend. That meant a lot to me to have that support from people around the world. So thank you so much for doing that. And hopefully you learned a little bit from my experience to lock down your security a little bit more so that you don't get hacked as well. Go check out. Thank you, Chad, for the reminder. Chad is putting it up there. Go over to Meeple, a Man versus Meeple. Go over to their YouTube channel and check out their stream right now or their video about their little bracketed March Madness tournament. Have fun with it. Vote on some games if you can do that over there. And yeah. Oh, I'll answer a quick question here before we go. Horde of the Board says, below the coins and expeditions, what cards do I put in there? I don't see anything on the side of the box. What cards should go in there? It's just like kind of an extra place for cards potentially. I put my solo Altama cards down there because I don't play expeditions solo, but anything can technically go down there. Any cards can technically go down there. Whatever cards you don't find yourself using, you can put down in that little slot. All right, have a great day. Have a great week. I will see you on Monday for April Fool's Day. That will be the next live stream, Monday, April 1st at 10 o'clock Central Time. I'll see you then. Bye.